You're very welcome back to another episode of Talks About Tech Weekly. This is Talks About Tech Weekly, episode 108 today, recorded on Saturday, the 19th of July, 2014. You're very welcome to the show. I am your host, Micah McAndrew. And as always, I am joined by Mr. Kevin McAndrew in the studio today. How are you doing today, Kevin?
Grand.
That's good. You know what grand stands for?
No.
Neither do I. So we took a week off last week because we were extremely busy. We were traveling for the whole week. So I was planning on doing the show earlier on a Friday like I normally do. But unfortunately, that didn't work out. We just were so busy. So then we were gone pretty much for the rest of the weekend. So didn't get a chance to record. A lot of stuff happened last week. So I was planning on doing an interview for this week's show, but unfortunately that didn't go through. So, but we still have a lot of stuff to talk about.
Yeah, there have been a lot of rumors and deals.
Yeah, and some crazy, crazy things going on. So I think we should start off with a little bit of Microsoft news. Of course, the biggest thing in the Microsoft news this week was Microsoft laying off 18,000 employees.
Yeah.
So this week, Microsoft announced basically the largest ever layoffs in the history of the company, with 18,000 layoffs in total. That's about 14% of their entire workforce. This will be, all of these layoffs will pretty much be taking place within the next 6 months, before the beginning of the next fiscal year in next June of 2015.
Yeah. Now, it might sound like a lot. And that Microsoft, you know, they might be doing badly, so they might have to get rid of a couple of people. But the majority of these people are actually, of the 25,000 they inherited from Nokia.
Right. So if you don't know, Microsoft bought Nokia this year. And so Nokia inherited 25,000 employees.
Microsoft.
Microsoft inherited 25,000 employees from Nokia.
Yeah.
Basically, they're going to be letting go 12,500 employees from Nokia.
Yeah.
So that's half the Nokia employees. So 12,500 of those are going to be Nokia employees, not actual Microsoft employees. And as well, most of those Nokia employees are actually going to be to do with hardware, manufacturing in the plants. They're going to be shutting down a number of Nokia manufacturing plants around the world, in China and a number of different places as well. They're going to be doing that. And a lot of those employees are actually going to be from those plants rather than actually from, you know, software end or kind of more high up execs in Nokia.
Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting. Microsoft's new CEO, Satya Nadella, is definitely making his mark straight away. He's definitely restructuring and refocusing the company. He basically said that Microsoft is still hiring, though, in certain strategic areas. Because what's actually going to happen is, although they're laying off 18,000 people, many of those people from Microsoft who are going to be getting laid off will be hired into other jobs in different sectors of Microsoft. This is basically what's going to be happening. Yeah, so, you know, although it's never good to see a loss in jobs in any company, especially 14% of the workforce, Microsoft is a very, very bloated company at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
It's got way too many employees. It's kind of a little bit all over the place. And I think this kind of a restructuring is definitely very, very much necessary. And it's kind of interesting, Nadella's kind of vision for Microsoft, he's got a very clear vision, and that's a great, great thing to see from any CEO, especially from a company that they don't really know what they're doing. They have Xbox, which is a gaming platform, but they also have Windows, which is software, and now they're looking at hardware. And Windows is kind of all over the place, because they've got Windows RT, they've got Windows 8, which is kind of like in between a touchscreen based operating system and a full on desktop operating system.
Yeah.
And then they have Windows Phone. And Windows Phone doesn't run on tablets. Windows Phone only runs on phones, and Windows 8 and Windows RT runs on tablets. It's really, really fragmented. It's really all over the place. They've got their own hardware, which is like Surface, but they also have OEMs making their own tablets and their own phones, Windows Phone and all this. And now they've just, after buying Nokia,
which is one of their biggest,
which was their biggest OEM for Windows Phone. And also, they had started making a Windows 8 or a Windows RT tablet, I believe. And now they're actually beginning to... Nadella basically does not want to go near hardware. He wants to focus more towards cloud. Now, that doesn't mean that he's going to stop manufacturing hardware, but he's going to put a lot less emphasis on it. He's shutting down many of the Nokia manufacturing plants because... he doesn't want the focus to be on hardware. He wants the focus to be on cloud services for mostly enterprise. He's basically working on Microsoft's strengths.
Yeah.
Which at the moment is a domination in the operating system market. They have the advantage over Apple in the lower cost for desktop devices. But I know that he realizes that the PC market is steadily, actually very rapidly, in the decline. And more mobile devices are becoming popular. So instead of focusing on mobile devices as much, he's going to focus on cloud services for those mobile devices, such as like Azure and Office 365 and OneDrive. Like, they have Office for the iPad now. That's basically what they're going to be doing. Is focusing more on cloud services, which might, like, if you looked 5 years ago, you wouldn't say Microsoft is a cloud services company, but their Azure server infrastructure and cloud infrastructure is really, really good for businesses and enterprise.
Yeah.
So that's basically what Microsoft are going to be focusing on. What's your opinion on this, Kevin?
It's very interesting move on his part, because I think, as you said, they're focusing on their strengths. It's very interesting, because you don't, like, a lot of tech companies have been haven't really done that, and they've gone off and done something completely different. But because Microsoft have dominated so much in laptops and computers, mainly with Windows, it's good to see that they're still holding on that market, because there's always going to be a demand for laptops and computers. They're not going to go away. It's not going to be completely changed, and it's just going to be mobile devices that everybody is using, because laptops and computers, like desktop computers, have their own strengths to them, whereas mobile devices have other strengths. Like, you're not exactly going to sit down and type out a document on your iPhone, because it's much nicer to have a proper keyboard for it and a nice big screen. It's good for watching movies to have a big screen. So it's good to see that Microsoft aren't trying to get into another market and trying to get into the mobile market, and therefore sacrificing some of the market in laptops and desktop computers.
Yeah, I definitely agree on that. Because I think Apple and Google really got into the mobile market. Microsoft were far too late getting in there.
Yeah. Like, they're not going to be making any phones that are successful anytime soon, or anything like that.
Windows Phone has gotten a really, really big market share. A lot of people would rather get a Windows Phone than an Android right now.
Mm.
And while I'm not one of those people, if iOS wasn't around, I would get a Windows Phone, because Android still has the same bugs that it had when I was using an Android phone all the way back in Android 2.3. That's when I had my last Android phone, the HTC Desire S, which I was extremely unsatisfied with.
And then I got that phone then.
Right. It was it was a dog of a phone. Now, Android has definitely come a long way since then. Android phones are much improved. Hardware is much improved. HTC are making fantastic hardware with the HTC One. If I was to buy and the One M8, if I was to buy an Android phone right now, that's the phone I would buy.
It's amazing.
Beautiful phone. Yeah.
But the thing is, though, that...
But Android still has a lot of the bugs. You have the Moto G. What's your opinion on this?
I have the Moto G, but like for me, there are some bugs that are kind of annoying. Like before this phone, I had the Desire that Michael was just talking about, the Desire S. And one of the biggest bugs with that was that if you lost coverage at all, you have to turn off your phone and turn it back on when you're in a place that you're sure has coverage. So every time I went into school, because in our school it has like really, really thick walls, and they also have GSM blockers and things around the school. So sometimes you just lose connection. And then you have to turn your phone off, turn it back on. And with the Desire S, it took maybe 2 to 3 minutes, if not longer. Sometimes it took maybe 5 minutes to boot back up. So it was very annoying. And that was a huge bug in Android at the time. But then I got the Moto G. And Motorola had just been bought by Google. And they were kind of... The good thing about the Moto G is that... It got KitKat. It was one of the first phones to get KitKat. Even though it's one of the more cheaper phones, it got an update really quickly because it was with Motorola, which Google owned. So that's a huge drawback with Android. When you get, a cheaper Android phone, like maybe a Samsung Galaxy Mini, just for example.
Sure.
You're not going to get...
I don't think they sell anymore, but yeah.
But just as a cheap
phone. I haven't even... I'm not even up to date with the latest cheap Android phones that are out there.
Yeah, I know.
I better look some up, but yeah, keep talking.
So let's say you have a cheap Android phone. Usually, you're not going to get the best or the latest software. It's not going to be available for that phone. And at the time, KitKat had just came out when I got the Moto G. So... I was running the best software you possibly could. And bearing in mind that it was only €180, which in smartphone terms is pretty good, especially for the specs and things, that I got KitKat was really good. But in KitKat, a lot of the bugs are ironed out. And I think that's one of the biggest problems, is that people are still stuck with older versions of Android that still have those bugs. But again, in KitKat and, what is it, Android F? No, wait. Android L.
L, yeah.
That's coming out.
Right.
You know, a lot of those bugs are still probably going to be there. Like, the most amount of bugs are in the phone.
Yeah, I kind of feel like Android L is... It's really, really... I mean, Android has been the same way for a long time now. And Android L is definitely going to be putting in a very, very new look into Android.
Yeah.
You know, so that's really what I think. It's a whole new design language, but I think that they will also clean up a lot of the old bugs, hopefully. I'm living in hope, but I think... that Android will finally figure all that kind of stuff out.
Yeah.
But if you compare it to iOS right now, I kind of feel like iOS has the edge in terms of just the way it functions. I mean, iOS, sure, it doesn't have all the bells and whistles that Android has. But it has a fantastic app store with censored apps that, you know, you don't have to worry about viruses or information being stolen from your phone.
Android is pretty good as well. But...
iOS, yes, absolutely. Because although with Android you basically can create whatever you want. In terms of apps, there's no limits on that. They do, if there is an app that is reported to them as malicious, they will take it off the store. Yeah. So 99% of Android apps are safe.
Yeah, I think the difference between the Android and Apple App Store, it's not that the apps could be malicious on the Android App Store, because all that's taken care of. But I think it's just that there are so many...
It's the quality of the apps on Android.
Yeah, so many kind of weird apps.
There's absolutely...
Like,
some,
would you
use
some
there's
of
some
those?
Great apps on Android, but... there's some ones that are not so great either.
Yeah, when you look,
on
when
iOS,
looking...
the apps have to live up to a standard to be put in the App Store by Apple.
Yeah.
So
when you're looking for a certain app on the Android App Store, sometimes it can be difficult to find it because other completely irrelevant apps come up before that one, or you know.
Yeah. All right. Should we move on, Kevin?
Yeah. Sure.
All right, let's move on to talk a little bit about Apple and IBM. Now, this is a strange deal because I don't really think Apple and IBM really have been getting on in recent times. The last time Apple and IBM collaborated on a project was PowerPC, all the way back in the 90s. Yeah, early 90s. It was an idea with IBM and Motorola, because at the time Motorola would have gone out of business if they didn't get the deal, and it wasn't in IBM's interest for Motorola to go out of business. So that was quite a long time ago, but it was IBM that did that deal with Apple. Since then, you know, Apple have moved on to Intel processors in their computers, and so that deal with that deal finally fell through. And so now Apple have basically signed another deal with IBM, and this time Apple is teaming up with IBM to basically become the biggest company in the mobile enterprise market.
Yeah,
this deal is basically going to make Apple the dominating force in mobile enterprise hardware. And basically, the whole thing is employees of big, large enterprise companies. What happens at the moment is that they will get an iPhone or they will get an iPad at home. And they basically fall in love with these devices and they want to be able to use these in the workplace. However, enterprise infrastructure in large companies does not really play too well with Apple mobile devices. Sure, Apple have added in mail support for Exchange servers and all that kind of stuff, but that's very, very basic. A lot of large enterprises have custom enterprise infrastructures. Many of their infrastructures are IBM infrastructures. That's basically what IBM do, is all enterprise infrastructure for businesses.
They barely do any consumer stuff.
No, they don't do any. No, they don't do any consumer stuff. It just, they sold that market to Lenovo, basically. Yeah. So this is the problem: is that people have iPhones and people have iPads, but they're not really allowed to use them in the workplace. So now,
or able to use them, even.
Yeah. As well as being allowed, though, because there's a security thing as well. Large enterprises are very, very security conscious about using, you know, certain devices. They're basically still on BlackBerries and Windows laptops. So basically, as part of the deal, IBM will provide apps on iOS. They're going to be making a number of apps, lots of software for iOS, for both iPhone and iPad, for enterprise clients, which will basically allow these employees at large companies to be able to use their iOS devices in the workplace. So I think this is great. It's great for IBM and it's great for Apple. And Apple are definitely, I mean, they're already, I mean, BlackBerry sales are basically non-existent at the moment. BlackBerry, I think they recently announced that they're going to be putting out BlackBerry Assist in their new release of their software, BlackBerry 10.3. And basically, it's a version of Siri for BlackBerry OS. That's kind of how far behind they are right now.
Yeah.
And they're coming out with a number of new phones as well, a number of new handsets next year.
We'll have to see how they...
I'll be honest, I can't see anyone who's going to buy BlackBerry now.
Yeah.
Because Apple has basically taken over that market already. They are rapidly becoming the largest provider of mobile enterprise hardware. They're just great devices for any kind of a person working in a large business.
Yeah.
There's no point for people to use BlackBerries anymore. And now with this deal, it's going to just make Apple grow faster and faster and faster and quicker. And more businesses are going to be adopting these devices.
Yeah. Another thing about Apple and iPhone is that, and any iOS devices, is that the App Store is great. If you look at the BlackBerry App Store, it's not as good as Apple's. There are hardly...
I think you're being a bit nice.
...any applications in comparison.
Like 50% of the apps are made by one guy on the BlackBerry App Store.
Yeah, so...
So, you know, that's the way it runs. But
even if they do come out with a nicer device than the iPhone, there isn't really any reason to go with BlackBerry because... Apple are so developed in the app store, with their app store, I mean, that, you know, you're not going to get as good apps on BlackBerry. Most certainly you aren't.
No, definitely not. So the IBM, this is going to be great because basically, because Apple is growing so huge in this enterprise market, IBM is going to now be able to directly financially benefit from Apple's upcoming success in the enterprise market. They have basically negotiated themselves into a fantastic deal which allows them to make a crap ton of money on Apple's success in the enterprise market. And for Apple, it's great because it gives them a whole new opportunity. So Apple doesn't mind doing this for IBM because they're getting IBM's services as well. And also included in the deal, IBM will basically be providing customer support for these enterprise customers as well. Although Apple are said to also be providing a small portion of that enterprise support, it'll be mostly IBM for that.
Indeed.
So, it's good.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it doesn't really affect the average consumer in any way, shape, or form, but it is a huge kind of a deal in the tech news this week because, well, it's kind of a surprising one, being honest. IBM and Apple are known to be getting along too well. So, you know, Apple have been making some strange decisions recently with buying Beats. And now doing this deal with IBM, they're doing some interesting new things that is very unlike Apple, the Apple that we know at the moment. So anyway, I think we should move on to the next topic. Kevin, you want to take this one?
Yeah, sure. So there's been a new law introduced in Europe recently. When was it introduced?
The law has been in for a little while, but really it's about 2 weeks ago that Google started implementing this law on their own services, and a number of other search engines are now doing this.
Mm-hmm. So the law is nicknamed the right to be forgotten.
That's a great nickname.
Yeah. And it is pretty much...
The right to be forgotten.
The right to be forgotten. And this law pretty much outlines that any European citizen has the right to remove data from the internet.
Mm.
So Google, in response to this new law, has launched a web page where people can request links and other information to be taken off search results on Google in Europe, right? So it's kind of specific. Now, not all search engines have brought in something like this yet.
Mm-hmm.
And Google is the first to do it. But you have to remember, though, at the same time, that Google is probably one of the biggest search engines. It handles about 90% of the searches on the internet. So
here's the thing. Basically, this was running through the European Parliament for quite a while, and the case that the European Parliament were making is that there are many things on the internet that are very, very difficult to take down. And the issue is that if something goes up on the internet, it's probably going to be up there forever.
Yeah.
Now, we all know that something can be true one day and not true the next day. So how does someone take something down that might have been true before but isn't true now? So something, let's say someone was looking for a job and something happened in their past, but it doesn't affect them now. And it's still up there about them and it's preventing them from getting a job, for example. How does that person go and take that down?
Yeah.
Right now, there is a way of doing it. In the US, you can do it. You can claim it. You can go to Google. And you can deal with it officially with Google, okay? Mm-hmm. It's quite a lengthy process. It's not an easy process to do. And this is why the European Parliament was trying to make this easier to do. However, the mistake that they made in this was they generalized this law far too much. And the reason, for example, they basically left it up to the search engine. Now, this is part of the law, is that search engines must allow anybody to take down information about them. Now, that's extremely general. They didn't even say, any information that they want that may be false, okay? But that's way too general.
Yeah.
You have to be more specific. So they basically left it up to the search engine to determine what might be information that is eligible to be taken down.
Yeah. So
they did not provide any guidelines on this or any specifics.
Yeah.
So they basically, the mistake that the European Parliament made was leaving it up to the search engines. So Google were basically the first to implement this. Now, many people have been criticizing Google for this because they said, yes, this law has been brought out by the European Parliament, but there was no specified time frame for this law to be implemented by search engines. There's no specific time frame for them to have to implement it. And why did Google implement this straight away? Well, the thing is, Google is a huge company and they're like the biggest search engine in the world. And so they don't want to be technically infringing on any laws.
Yeah.
If you can't blame Google for simply implementing a law. Mm-hmm. You can't criticize Google for implementing a law. It's fact, it's law, it has to be done.
Yeah.
Now, Microsoft have been implementing this now with Bing as well. Mm-hmm. Same thing. So the biggest thing now that's happening is that criminals who have committed serious crimes are now going up on Google and taking that information off. This is extremely relevant information to the general public that is being unlisted on Google. Now, just to clarify, this information is not actually being taken off the internet. It's only being taken off the list on Google.
Yes.
So.
Now, I think one of the biggest problems at the moment is that it is, as you pointed out, that it's very easy to make a request. So if you want to make a request, first of all, you have to be in Europe. So you have to give some form of identification, like a driver's license or something like that.
Which is a super easy thing to do, by the way.
Yeah, to prove that. Something to prove that you're in
Europe. Passport. Whatever. Right?
So once you have some sort of identification that you identify that you're in Europe and it's all official and it's grand or whatever, Then you fill out a form. In the form, you say what links you would like to be blocked and give a reason why. And then Google come along and they take a look at this form and they're like, okay, that's very nice. All right. And they say, they look at the link, and if their explanation is relevant and they think it's okay, they think it's a good thing to take down that information, then they'll do it.
Right.
But one of the biggest problems, as he also mentioned, is that they've been getting a lot of requests. Like in the first four days, they got 41,000 requests. Which is a lot of requests.
And I'm sure a lot of them were from criminals wanting to take down some records about their criminal activities.
Yeah, so the majority of them would be something like that. Because if you think about it, who else would want to take down information?
Yeah.
Now, there are some things.
There
like,
are
for
certain
example,
cases, absolutely. Yeah.
For example, like if you got an embarrassing photo taken of you or something, and someone set up a Facebook account and just had it completely.
Yeah, that's definitely something that you would want to take down.
Yeah, and that makes sense to take something like
that because
down.
Otherwise, if you were to do this without this kind of a form, you have to go contacting Google and, you know.
But you see, another thing is, though, that there are so many requests, and if you're going to be processing a load of requests, it's very difficult to make a logical decision on those requests because computers can't exactly make a logical decision.
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of have to have people reviewing these things. Mm-hmm. Now, there are some things that you can automate with computers, but a lot of them have to be reviewed by actual people who sit down and, you know, go through these. So, the way that it's been implemented is very general, and a lot of people, even Eric Schmidt, he was saying that it was, they implemented it in the completely wrong way, and they were kind of forced into bringing this out, because as you said, Google don't want to be infringing on any laws.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't their decision to bring this up. It's kind of an EU law that they have to bring it in.
Yeah.
But another thing about this is that it's only taken off Google in Europe. So if you're over in America or in Asia or Africa or anywhere in the world, apart from Europe, they still come up on the search results. So
well, that's because if the EU doesn't have that kind of power to be able to take websites off. Well, and the other thing now is in Europe, if we're in Europe, are we going to be getting a filtered version of the internet? This is the thing. So the internet, Google and many other search engines, a lot of the stuff on the internet in other countries will be different to what we have in the EU here.
Yeah.
I don't like that.
I think one of the greatest things about the internet is
it's crazy,
you can look up anything you want and you can find it.
And you know that if someone in one country can see it, a person in another country can also see it. The internet is the same no matter where you go, which is not true in China, in many other countries that have different kind of government setups where and dictatorships where they like to control society and filter what society sees in those countries. And I don't want to say the EU is doing as drastic kind of measures as what these other countries are doing, but it's kind of similar.
Yeah, I think.
Now, I don't think the reason. Sorry, Kevin. I don't think the reason why they want to do this is to filter out stuff, what people see, per se. It's just to filter out false information. But the way it's implemented is different.
Now, there's a reason why it's difficult to get something off the internet. And that's because, you know, criminals can't just go up and take down relative information.
That is true.
That is true. On the internet. So, I guess it's kind of annoying that it's very difficult to get something off the internet. Or it's difficult to get something off the internet. However, I'm not really sure if there's any other way to filter out a lot of those unwanted requests or anything like that.
Yeah.
Other than to make it difficult so that it's kind of a... It's like really, really important that you have to get it off the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And only if it's really important, you'll go to them and try and get it off search results.
Yeah.
And...
Well, I think the EU made a huge mistake in allowing the search engine to decide what kind of a request is the right kind of request and what kind of a request should not be allowed.
Yeah.
It's Google's. You're leaving it up to Google, and you're leaving it up to Microsoft and Yahoo and all those other search engines to do that. So, if someone goes up on Google, and Google accept the request, and then they go up on Bing, Bing mightn't accept that request.
Mm-hmm.
It's on a search engine basis. There's no guidelines. There's no rules to this. There's not even a time frame to implement this law. It doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah.
So, now, and I've already seen it comes up. I believe it comes up down in the bottom of when you do a search. It tells you that some of these search results have been blocked due to this law.
Yeah.
I've already seen it a number of times where it says one result has been blocked due to someone requesting to remove this result. And if you... If you run through a proxy, a VPN, to the US, you will be able to see that result.
Yeah.
It's crazy. I think. If it was something that Google did, so that it was implemented across all versions of Google on all countries.
Yeah.
You know, or that search engine has decided to do, but there you go.
I think their reason to implement this law is it's perfectly logical, and
I can't help you out here. I don't know what word you're looking for. It's perfectly logical.
And it's reasonable.
Reasonable. Is that the word you're looking for?
Yeah. And it's a reasonable reason to...
well, yeah, it is,
to
absolutely.
Do it. But the way they've implemented it...
All right, let's move on. Let's talk about iPhone 6 and other Apple rumors.
Again.
And leaks. Again.
Apples and rumors. Or Apple and rumors. Apple, Apple and rumors. There's so many rumors.
You know, it's kind of funny. Because, I mean, sure, you get Samsung device rumors and a few other rumors. Oh, sorry, Kevin. I keep unplugging your thing. I just tugging on the cable. I better be careful with that. But Apple really... I think people only care about Apple rumors, being honest. Let's talk about some iPhone 6 leaks and rumors. First of all... let's talk about the sapphire crystal display. Now, currently on iPhones, since the iPhone 5, they have had a sapphire crystal lens on the camera.
Yeah.
And basically, sapphire crystal is a very, very hard, durable, and very clear material. So it's ideal for a lens because it does not... If you put a lens in front of a camera, if you put a sapphire crystal lens in front of a camera, it doesn't discolor it or change the image in any way, shape, or form.
I think they have it on the home button as well.
So now on the iPhone 5S, they also have it on the home button, the sapphire crystal button. They've had it on kind of small little things on iPhones just to, you know, because they're low cost, do it on smaller parts. They haven't done a huge part of the phone yet. But apparently... And the new iPhone 6, the whole front part of the phone will be made of sapphire crystal glass.
Yeah, and it's not a rumor. Well, I guess it kind of is a rumor.
Well, it's a leak, really.
It's a leak.
So basically, Marques Brownlee, who is a very, very famous YouTuber, technology reviewer, technology, whatever you want to call it, he basically does a lot of technology reviews and stuff on YouTube. On his channel, MKBHD, on the 7th of July, he basically posted a video, which was, I better stop saying basically, but anyway, he posted a video, he put out a test of the new front part of the iPhone 6, so he, which is a sapphire crystal glass, the whole front is sapphire crystal glass, so he put it to the test. He took a knife out to it and started stabbing it.
And
took
keys.
He even tried to bend the glass and try and break it with his foot. He held it with his foot and tried to break it. It just bent.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable. If you think this is glass, bendable glass, it's pretty crazy.
Now, the thing about it is, though, it's not pure... Yeah. Sapphire crystal. Now, if it was pure sapphire crystal,
it would shatter, it wouldn't bend.
But... Yeah, and it would be way too expensive.
Absolutely. Yeah.
However, it is still really durable. It's more durable than Gorilla Glass, supposedly.
Definitely.
Yeah, and now I'm not sure if it's how much more expensive it is than Gorilla Glass, but I'm sure it is. Oh, flip. I'm sure...
Well, it's fine. It's fine.
Is it?
Yeah, it's fine.
Oh, it must be this though.
Yeah, anyway.
But I'm sure it is quite a bit more expensive than Gorilla Glass. But yeah, it's interesting to see that Apple would go with something like this. Because it's pretty difficult to scratch Gorilla Glass on its own.
Yeah,
I
think I did it. I have a huge, like, I have a big kind of a scrape on my iPad 2.
Yeah.
Which is just, it's just always there. But I don't know if that was actually Gorilla Glass. I think it was just glass.
I think it was
Gorilla Glass is very difficult to scratch. Yeah, you wouldn't do it with metal. Anyway, you have to get something a little bit stronger.
I guess it must be shatter resistant or something like that as well. Because a lot of... If you see any smash screens, usually it's an iPhone screen or something like that.
Yeah. Sorry, Kevin. I keep putting that thing off. We really need to get some new gear in the studio here. Everything's falling apart.
It's just an adapter, like.
It's just a little adapter, yeah. They all stop working.
They're all Maplin.
Yeah. Let's look at some other leaks and rumors. So people are still saying, yes, there will be a 4.7 inch version of the iPhone 6 and a 5.5 inch version of the iPhone 6. Now, at first I kind of thought, okay, a 5.5 inch version, I don't think Apple are going to do this. But now what people are saying is that the 5.5 inch version will be released a few months after the 4.7 inch version. Now, I think that pretty much everyone would not like to see a phone 5.5 inches. It's more fragmentation for Apple. They're already adding yet another screen size.
Yeah.
What are they trying to do? I mean, I think I really like the 4-inch form factor. I think most people, though, like something a little bit bigger because it's kind of the trend right now.
Yeah,
to have a slightly bigger phone. So 4.7 inch screen, the phone actually won't be that much bigger than the iPhone 4, but it'll be a good bit wider. That's the biggest difference between them and the iPhone 5. Sorry, but I think a 5.5 inch version is going to be way too big. Other rumors are a 13 megapixel camera, which I agree with, and the A8 processor. Now, I mean, the A7 processor is an extremely powerful processor. It's still one of the most powerful processors out there on the market right now. It beats, even though it's only a dual-core processor, it still beats a lot of quad-core processors, pretty much every quad-core processor out there. So the A8 processor will probably be similar to the A7, but it will have a lot of battery saving features as well.
Yeah, hopefully.
Hopefully, because my iPhone 5 battery is... You see, the biggest problem with these batteries is that they're great when you start, but after a few months, they start degrading.
Yeah. With my MacBook Air.
Yeah.
Oh, it's lithium ion
technology. It's just the way that it works.
With batteries now, you can't really get... It's very difficult to get a battery that won't degrade over time. Change over time. This lasts about an hour and a half.
Well, laptop batteries are actually an exception because they have designed... They're designed to be plugged in most of the time. So you don't plug in your MacBook Air that much.
Yeah.
You basically use it on battery all the time, which is...
Yeah.
You know, and the MacBook Air doesn't have good battery life anyway. It's like 5 hours.
This computer now runs about an hour and a half on battery.
Gee.
And that...
Even my MacBook Pro is better than that.
And, well, if you charge it up to full, sometimes you get it running maybe 2 hours or even longer. But with the new MacBook Air, apparently it runs at 9 hours and they've changed the battery so that it doesn't degrade as much.
Yeah.
Kind of like an iPad battery, pretty much. Which is good.
That'd be amazing, yeah. But that's on the 13-inch.
Yeah.
The 11-inch is 7 hours, I think.
Yeah. So,
Another thing is that it will have a 2 millimeter thick battery.
It's really thick.
That is...
It should be a 2 millimeter thin battery.
Yeah, I mean, that's extremely thin. That's crazy. I don't know. But the biggest thing, I think, about the 5.5-inch version is that the 5.5-inch version will have significantly better battery life than the 4.7-inch.
Yeah.
It'll have a bigger, much bigger battery. And that could convince me into getting that big phone, because battery life is quite an important thing. It's going to be interesting. Let's talk about the iPad Pro, Kevin.
Yep.
Okay. So,
this is interesting.
That's a good way of putting it. You took the words right out of my mouth. Okay. So, the rumors have been going around that Apple... I've seen a few leaked images of a... It basically looks like... it's like at the back of a so-called iPad Pro. It basically looks like the back of a MacBook Air, except with the Apple logo twisted that way. And you can see kind of like the volume buttons on the side and stuff.
And is it...
It's huge. 12.9 inches in size. So it's more like 13 inches than 12, which is basically like a 13-inch MacBook Air. Much, much larger than an 11-inch MacBook Air.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you've got your 11.6-inch MacBook Air in front of you right now, Kevin.
I do.
Could you imagine using that as a tablet?
Not really. It's pretty big.
Since I moved to the iPad Mini, I thought the 9.7-inch iPad is big. I mean,
and
I thought that was a massive, massive, massive thing.
Bevel on it is huge.
The bezel, yeah. Yeah.
Bezel. Sorry.
Whereas, you know, at 12.9, I mean, I saw some of the mock-ups of a person with this thing that people have done in bed watching like a movie. It looks ridiculous. It's like they're holding like, I don't know, a massive picture frame or something. It looks so funny.
Is there any, anything to reference the size of it beside some of the leaks? Or is it just it on its own?
How do you mean?
Is there a coin or something beside it? Because you could just take a picture of something.
Yeah, that is true. But you can see that it's bigger.
Yeah.
You can see it from the scale.
I guess
you can see it from the Apple logo,
inch.
Like the size of the Apple. Yeah. But okay, so let's talk about what people are saying about this MacBook or this iPad Pro. So, first of all, it's obviously a competitor to the... What? Is that a real image?
No.
Oh, okay.
It's photoshopped, obviously. But that's him holding the iPad.
Yeah, the original iPad. Yeah, that's like a massive flipping iPad.
Looks so funny.
Yeah, that's anyway. Good. But this is obviously a competitor to the Surface Pro from Microsoft.
Because
the Surface Pro is a pretty pop, if they do come out with it, which is actually quite a big possibility here. Yeah. I mean, not many rumors are not true.
That's very true. But you know, this one does seem a bit far-fetched.
It does. I would agree with you. It's kind of like an iWatch. There's no real hard evidence that Apple are manufacturing an iWatch, per se. But, or that they will come out with an iWatch. There are definitely people developing an iWatch in Apple, but you know that will actually be a finished product.
But not soon, anyway. Maybe next year,
I would say. Yeah. There's no real. Yeah.
But not within the next few months.
Yeah. But this is definitely a competitor to the Microsoft Surface Pro. Now, here's the thing: what kind of an operating system will this run? It's pretty obvious it would run iOS. iOS, but currently iOS 7 is not optimized for this. So they're saying on iOS 8 that they will optimize the operating system for larger devices, which will allow multitasking with split screen. So you can have split screen apps and all that kind of stuff on it, which definitely makes perfect sense.
I'm just trying to imagine
optimized for touch screens and all that.
Yeah, I'm just trying to imagine. 13-inch iPad, and like I'm running Mac OS on 11.6-inch.
Yeah,
you know. So could you imagine...
but the difference is Mac OS does not work on touchscreens.
Yeah, that's true. I know that, but you'd have to have kind of a hybrid between the two. And well, obviously Mac OS, a lot of the buttons are too small, I think, but a
13-inch is a 13-inch iOS device is. There's no problem with it because you have so much functionality on iOS these days. It's mostly screen real estate that is preventing you from doing more with it. If you think of all the apps, and then developers can go out and develop more apps for the iPad Pro that have more functionality.
Yeah.
And it's iOS is the perfect OS for touchscreen devices. So iOS in its current state is not suitable for a 12.9-inch.
No.
Device, but with iOS 8, with optimizations for larger screens and new versions of apps from developers that add additional functionality, support split screen, support advanced copying features and all this kind of stuff, I think it could be definitely a possibility.
You see, the thing is that when the iPad came out, a lot of people were like, we can't have this. Look, like if you look at how spaced apart each app icon is, it just looks like a blown up version
of the iPhone.
You know, it just doesn't make any sense.
And it was when it first came out. I mean, all the apps were basically large iPhone apps.
Yeah. So
which is kind of useless.
Not the apps, but the home screen.
Not just the home screen though. The way the layout of the apps were as well, a lot of the apps. They weren't efficiently using screen real estate until it started to develop a little bit.
But if you remember though, you said that the iPad mini is a much nicer form factor than the iPad. So I couldn't see a 13-inch iPad coming out with running just iOS as it is.
Well, yes.
But it'll have to change pretty drastically.
Yeah. Well, but you're looking at this the wrong way though, Kevin. I think you're looking at using an iPad Pro instead of using an iPad mini. It's a completely different device.
Yeah.
An iPad Pro would be used instead of a laptop or for what most people would use a laptop for now. Right? Mm. So what you're doing is this would be mostly mounted on the desk because there are rumors now that there'll be a keyboard case that will allow the iPad Pro to be on a desk. So very similar again to the Microsoft Touch Cover or the Microsoft Type Cover that's on the Surface Pro now that's available on the Surface Pro. It'd be mostly mounted on the desk, but it'll be more mobile and lighter than a laptop. And it'll have a removable keyboard, so you can use it mobile as a mobile device, but it'll mostly be mounted. You wouldn't use it the same way you'd use an iPad mini. And I'm finding The reason why I prefer the form factor of the iPad mini is because I can take it more places than I can take the iPad.
Yeah.
My big old iPad 2. It's way more practical that way. And it can do a lot of what the iPad, the big iPad, can do. Plus, iOS is not really optimized for that large of a screen, the 9.7-inch screen. I think it works better on the 7 or the 8-inch screen. Okay, I'm kind of with you on it's a little bit ridiculous.
Yeah.
And the problem is it would be competing, most likely competing with the MacBook Air.
It would.
Yeah. You know, and it adds more fragmentation. It doesn't really make sense for Apple. But let's keep on going. Probably 64 gig version, 128 gig version, yep. And 256 gig versions. You know, another thing is a stylus. Now, we all know what Steve Jobs said about styluses.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're fairly clunky. But
he did say a lot of stuff, though.
He did say a lot of things. He said about who wants a smaller tablet. This is the perfect form factor. Yeah. And then the iPad mini came out way, way better. So stylus could definitely be very useful on a larger tablet.
Yeah,
for design work and all that kind of stuff, definitely.
Yeah,
you know. So
I'm not sure if they'll build it into the iPad. It might be an Apple
no. If
it, stylus it,
no, if it, if it, no, if it, if it's separately. If it's a touch screen, it'll definitely be built in.
You think? Yeah.
Oh, built into the actual device.
Yeah, like that. You just pull out of the device.
Yeah, maybe not. That's a bit. Yeah, maybe not. But it'll definitely work on the touch screen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's kind of interesting. Now, obviously, this device will not work for, like, I'm starting up my web design company right now, Carb Digital. This will not work for me.
No,
it really would not. You really need a desktop computer with a keyboard and a mouse and a nice big honking display to be able, with as many pixels as possible, to be able to see it on the most number of devices possible.
Yeah,
that's really what you need. For professionals, it's not really, but for most people, this could do the job. Now let's talk about displays in this. Now, obviously, it'll include, you know, Apple's Touch ID button, home button for fingerprint scanners. But let's talk about displays here. So they're talking about rumors are saying that Apple are working on 2K versions and 4K versions. So 2K is greater than 1080p. So it'll be like a Retina display. So it'll be very, very high res. It'll be like a MacBook Pro Retina 13-inch kind of resolution.
That is a lot of pixels.
Yeah, definitely.
On a 13-inch.
But they're also talking about 4K screens. If there's not a 4K display, that'd be 4,096 pixels by 3,072 pixels.
Okay.
I'm going to say, oh God, I'm sorry, Kevin. I keep talking on this thing. I'm going to say that this is the thing is, you pretty much cannot physically, yeah, your mic is on, don't worry about that. You cannot physically see the difference between 1080p and 4K until you get to probably about 30 to 40 inch monitors. I would say, yeah. 30 at the minimum is when you'll start to probably see a little bit of an increase in quality between 1080p and 4K. Your eyes just can't distinguish that kind of detail
until you get
to much larger displays. And that's why 4K should be used, is for people who have 80 to 100 inch displays.
Yeah.
I mean, you can obviously see the pixels. Once you get to that kind of screen size, unless you use 4K, you know, that's really what 4K is there for. If you have a 13-inch laptop, that's 4K. Doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Or a tablet, that's 4K. Doesn't make sense. Plus, they're going to have to scale everything up hugely anyway. So, now let's talk about processors. Everyone's saying, yeah, it's going to have an AA processor or like a modified version of the AA processor to give it a little bit more oomph, to do a lot more pro tasks. Hey, what about some Intel processors? Well, if it's running iOS, it won't be running an Intel processor.
Yeah.
That's the thing. there's really no need. The Apple ARM processors are extremely powerful. And if you're running iOS, there's absolutely zero reason why I would use an Intel processor.
Mm-hmm.
So, basically, in terms of cameras, then, you know, probably won't have a great back camera. But in terms of a front-facing webcam, they'll probably do a 1080p thing. Because at the moment, it's only 720p on web on front-facing webcams. Just, you're right there, Kev.
Yeah.
Okay. Probably do it like a 1080p front-facing webcam just to, you know, to have a proper webcam, whatever. So, this is interesting. I think that this tablet will definitely work for the majority of people now to replace a laptop. However, I kind of think that the standard 9.7-inch iPad would also do the same thing. Yes, you're getting a little bit more functionality with the bigger display, but just the usefulness of going with a normal size iPad or an iPad mini, it just, you know, it's the practicality of those is just far greater than having this huge honking tablet. It doesn't make sense to me because it's going up head to head against the iPad or the MacBook Air. So I think it's not going to come through true. But I think we're definitely living in a post-PC era. A lot of people now, they don't have laptops. They run off an iPad or most of the time it's an iPhone. If you look at the latest stats, PC sales, laptop and desktop sales have been going way, way, way down. iMacs are doing quite well for professionals, but most people aren't buying iMacs. Laptop sales are going way down as well. Now, they started to plateau now at a much lower level, which kind of tells you that, okay, we're definitely, if we weren't in a post-PC era before, we definitely are now. Most people don't have laptops. Most people have a phone, and that's where they do all of their surfing of the web. Like, the problem with me is I basically make a living on the internet and using computers. So I'm a very, very bad example as a normal person who uses technology. But if I was to think of all the stuff that I would do that a normal person does with technology, like looking at YouTube videos, surfing the web, most websites I just look at on my phone. I don't go on my laptop unless I'm already on my laptop. I won't go to my laptop to look at a website. I'll just do it on my phone.
Yeah.
Most of that kind of stuff, checking email. If I'm checking personal email, I check it on my phone. Work email is different. I do it on my laptop. But I do basically everything that a normal person would do on my phone. I even write some documents on my phone.
Yeah.
I don't do as much stuff on my tablet, on my iPad mini. For my iPad mini, I watch Netflix, basically. YouTube videos, Netflix, all that stuff, because it's a bigger screen. I don't do anything on my big iPad anymore, except for I use it in the studio here for lyrics for songs, because it's a nice big screen and my eyesight isn't that good and all that. I'm like an old man. But, you know. So that's basically what, you know, if I looked at all the stuff that I do that every other person would do, I do it on my phone. It's only when I get to work stuff that I start using never use an iPad for anything to do with business. Never. It just seems unreliable. If I wanted to send an email to someone with work about work stuff, there's no way I would do that unless it was a really quick email. Never do that on an iPad or an iPhone. Have to go to my laptop for that. Plus, I don't have my work email on my phone anyway, because I'll be checking it every 2 seconds. So there's that, you know. So anything I do, you know, obviously, I have to do app development, web development, all that kind of stuff has to be done on a real computer, a real PC. But I definitely think we're living in a post-PC era. What's your opinion, Kevin? Sorry, I hogged that there.
For me, I never really use my phone for stuff. Like, I use my phone if I want to text someone or ring someone, or if, let's say we're up in the kitchen having a chat, there are a few people over.
Yeah.
Instead of just going down to my room, getting my computer or iPad, I'll just take out my phone.
Okay. Well, I'm gonna say you're a weird person.
Thanks.
Not weird in a bad way. Not weird in a good way. But you're I don't mean it in a bad way at all. You're not a good representation of an average person.
I know.
Because you are the only person I have ever seen using a MacBook Air in bed. At a certain angle on its side. You're lying on your side and you got your MacBook Air lying on its side. I mean, so you watch YouTube videos in bed on your MacBook Air. Now, the thing with you is when you got your iPad mini, you basically, your MacBook Air started gathering dust in the corner.
I know.
You never used it. So you were always using your iPad mini. So you were like a normal person there for a while. And then one day I said to you, hey, do you ever use your MacBook Air? And you're like, no. And then when I said that, the day after, you just started using your MacBook Air, and now your iPad mini is gathering dust. So you either use your MacBook Air or you use your iPad mini. You never use both.
I know.
And you use your desktop computer, which runs Windows on it, for everything else.
Okay. Well, okay. Let me explain.
It's weird.
Okay? So this is kind of what happened. I was using my iPad. When I got it, I was like, oh, this is pretty cool. You know, it's nice and light. You can bring it around. So I started using that. And then I kind of forgot about my other computer, about my MacBook Air. And I was like, maybe I'll take out the MacBook Air and just, you know, boot it up or whatever, make sure it's still working. So then I booted up and I was like, geez, this is so much more useful than MacBook Air. Or than the iPad mini, I mean, sorry. And then I was like, maybe I'll use this. So then I started using my MacBook Air. And then I was like, oh, well, you know, I'll just take out my iPad mini just to chat or just to watch like YouTube videos and stuff. And then I'll just use my MacBook Air for other things. And then I was kind of like,
what do you do other than watch YouTube videos?
You see, the thing was that I only had one power, what are they called? Extension cables. Mm-hmm. So what I do, like, I couldn't charge two things simultaneously.
Yeah.
And I couldn't, I don't know why, but I just used this one power cable and it was under my desk in a load of wires and I couldn't be bothered to keep swapping out the different chargers. Okay, so it was really annoying. Yeah. And then I kind of forgot about my iPad mini. And now that's kind of gathering dust.
Yeah, okay. What I'm going to say now is I think that at the moment there are too many categories of devices.
Yeah.
Personally, pretty much every web designer now uses a Mac laptop and they don't use a MacBook Air. Pretty much every web designer uses a MacBook Pro.
Pro, yeah.
And the reason why is because web designers need a really powerful computer. They can plug it into an Apple Cinema display if they need,
mm-hmm.
right? And then they can also, the thing with web designers, I know because I have to go, I just have to, if I get a job, I have to go somewhere to meet that person. I have to take basically all my work with me. So I have to take my laptop. I can't take my desktop with me. So basically all of my...
You could.
Well, you know what, Kevin? You could go in. How are you doing? Can I have just 10 minutes just to set up? Have you got a power plug here? I just need to lift my desktop computer in here and my monitor and just plug it up. It'll take about 15 minutes if that's all right. It's like, what? You can't do that. But basically, in the web design world, you need to have a computer that's powerful enough to do a lot of work with coding, with using Photoshop, designing stuff. But you need it to be able to plug into a huge... Oh, it does. Trust me.
With coding.
Well, coding, no. But to use Photoshop and Illustrator and Premiere Pro for doing design.
It takes forever to load on video stuff. Desktop.
But you also need to be able to plug it into a big display so that you can test your websites to make sure that the responsiveness is working correctly. Mm-hmm. You need to be able to then, if you need to go somewhere, just be able to pluck it out and bring your laptop with you and you have all your work still there.
Yeah.
So I don't use my Mac desktop for that. What I use my Mac desktop for is for doing podcast production, music production, all the heavy, really, really heavy stuff in the studio where I'm not going to be moving.
Yeah.
So I think there's you're either someone who uses a desktop or uses a laptop. You don't use both. I'm a very, very rare exception. You have a tablet that is a 7-inch and a phone. They're your three devices. You have a laptop, tablet, and phone.
Yep.
That's basically it at the moment, I think.
Yeah. So, well, with me, I only use my phone for if I'm in a twist and I have to look something up on the internet.
Yeah, you explained that.
Games, sometimes. Ring people, texting people. Then I use either my MacBook Air or my iPad Mini. And then I use my desktop for really kind of like things like Premiere Pro, After Effects. And sometimes if I'm just using my desktop, I use it for the normal things that I do as well. So sure. I'm kind of a weird person in that
way. You're a very weird person. And on that note, we're going to wrap it up for today's episode. Kevin, thank you very much for joining me for this episode. Where can people follow you? On the internet, find you on the internet. You haven't blocked
me.
You haven't blocked yourself from Google results in Europe, have you?
Not yet.
Not yet.
But you can find me at MacAndrewKev on Twitter, and
That's it. Yeah. What happened to your website?
Mission Command.
Mission Command. You do anything with that?
No, not yet.
Okay. Well, I want to say that we are working on, we have a few ideas for doing some video stuff.
Yeah.
And we're not going to say anything about it until we have it done. But I think
and
this
we have to get
next
it.
Yes, we are absolutely going to do it. We're going to get working on, I'm going to start just putting together, I have ideas for 2 podcasts, YouTube video stuff, all sorts of stuff. That's going to be
Because
we're
going to regret it otherwise because we're on holidays.
We won't have the time to do it, and it'll be put in the back.
And I'm doing big tests as well this year, so I probably won't have as much time.
Right. All right, so that pretty much wraps it up. You can follow me on Twitter. TalksAboutTech1 is my Twitter account. Check out the website, talksabouttech.com. It's there. I know most people just listen to the podcast, but head over to the website sometimes. You can email me, michael@talksabouttech.com. That's my email address. We'll see you all next week. Thank you very much for tuning in to this bloated episode of Talks About Tech Weekly. See you next week.